If you're a guest with us this morning, I'd like to welcome you to Crossbridge. I hope that you find this as a welcoming place. I'm thankful already for your patience, as this morning I'm sure it was not easy to wake up when it's 13 degrees outside. And we lost our janitor for a second this week when we couldn't get into the cafeteria, so you're probably already sitting closer to someone than you feel comfortable with. So I'm glad we're staying warm together. How's that? You know, if you're a guest with us, like I said, I hope that you find this as a welcoming place. And for all of us, I really hope that this year and that this morning, we find ourselves taking one step closer, intentionally moving closer into a direction towards Jesus. Wherever you're at, I'm glad that you're here. Now, as we hit the new year, it's very common for people to make resolutions or for others to make goals. Do we have any resolution makers or goal makers? Anybody here? A handful of you. Others of you are like, no way. I just set myself up to fail every year. I'm not doing it again. I've already talked to a handful of you. You've said, I've made resolutions. I'm like, that's awesome. And you're like, I failed already. Is that encouraging? I'm not sure what to say to you. I tend to be a goal maker myself. And I like to make goals. Goals help me stay focused. And, you know, I love listening to other people's resolutions as well. On New Year's Eve and the week leading up to that, in between Christmas and New Year's, I found myself with family, friends, and neighbors asking the question, and it was a very specifically asked question, what do you want to see happen in this next year? What do you want to see happen? And I kind of got this look. Huh? What do you mean, what do I want to see happen? Doesn't the year just happen to you and you kind of respond to it? And it made me stop for a second and think, boy, I wonder how many people stop and look back at the last year and go, what the heck just happened? So that we can turn and look at a new year and say, okay, well, I'm not going to let this happen. I'm going to make something happen. I'm going to take this year and do something with it. Now, like I said, I am a goal-oriented person, and I'm that way. I watched my dad, as I was growing up, have lists of goals for everything. I mean, we could be cleaning the house, and there was goals. And I'm like, defense on the toilet cleaning. That's Joey's goal, you know, not my goal. But we had goals for everything, so he did this every year. So it just made sense to me, this is what we do. But I realized is that I asked that question to people and got, huh? People then would stop. And I believe they'd ask themselves the question, what do I want to happen this year? And I believe that I got some heartfelt answers, maybe things that you have said you want out of the new year. Phrases like, I want to be nicer this year. I want to eat healthier. If there was kids in the room, usually you'd get the, I want to be more patient. That's one of mine. I want to have more courage. On New Year's Eve, a resolution you usually get is, I want to drink less in the next year until tomorrow. My favorite, I want to lose some weight. I want to read more. None of these are bad goals for 2017 or bad resolutions, but I believe that they all point to the same underlying desire that we all have. And honestly, we feel really uncomfortable communicating. I believe that most of us in 2017, we want to be happy. We make these resolutions and these goals not because we think, oh, I have nothing better to do than set a goal or a resolution to read more, or nothing excites me more than limiting what I eat and not doing what I, you know, no one wants to do this. We do this because we think that if we hit these goals or if we get these resolutions, we will be happier. And we want that for each other, don't we? I wish you Happy New Year. You wish me Happy New Year. Happiness is at the core of what we're looking for. And, you know, if you just type in how to be happy on Amazon, what you're going to get, this was Thursday, and it was funny. Thursday morning, I typed how to be happy in Amazon, and there was 17,300 different books on how to be happy. By Thursday night, when I typed how to be happy in again, there's now 17,644. So somewhere on Thursday, like 340 books came up on how to be happy. Why? We all want this. Now, they are for kids, they are for teens, they're for adults, they're for married couples, they're for widows, they're for divorcees, they're for... If you can imagine a situation, there's a book on how to be happy in that, or how to be happy through that. This is at the core of what we're looking for. And that's why at Crossbridge, over the next 6 weeks, we want to help you with your New Year's resolutions or your goals by looking at what the Bible has to say about being happy. We want you to be happy. And I'll be upfront with you, though. Most of what we're going to unpack probably can't be found in a majority of those 17,000-plus books. Because when it comes to the Bible, especially the stories about Jesus and what Jesus communicates, it doesn't quite match up with a true definition of what happiness is. So I'm warning you up front, when we unpack some of this together, it may be uncomfortable and you're thinking, Jimmy, that doesn't make sense. That's not logical. I want to tell you I understand, because as I look at some of this, I'm thinking, Jesus, why do I feel like every time I say up, you say down? Every time I think left, it's really right. Well, that's because I'm super messed up inside and I don't always know what I'm doing. But I can trust that Jesus does. So it's with that in mind that I'd like to go after some of the more root issues that we can deal with in order to experience happiness. So we're going to be in the Gospel of Matthew this morning. If you have your Bibles with you, it'll be about three quarters of the way through the Bible. On your phones or your tablets, it'll be about three quarters of the way down, and we will have the verses up on the screen for you. But as you're getting there, let me just set this up for you a little bit. In Matthew chapter 4, Jesus has started his ministry. He has started by going to people and kind of calling some disciples, and he goes from town to town, and it tells us in Matthew chapter 4 that he has been healing every disease and sickness. Now, I don't know about you, but if I have disease and sickness, I'm going to be looking for Jesus. And everyone in this community starts to think, and they start to hunt for Jesus. And he starts to gather these massive crowds around him. They are following him wherever he goes. And you've got people coming from all over the place. They are traveling miles upon miles to find this new miracle worker. At the end of Matthew chapter 4, this huge crowd follows him. And he goes up to the top of a mountain. And in Matthew 5, 6, and 7, we find a passage called the Sermon on the Mount. This is a collection of sayings from Jesus that I'm going to be honest, I think he said these phrases and he said these analogies over and over and over and over, because we see them played out in his life constantly. But this, if you want to know what Jesus is all about, you can just find it in these three chapters. If you've got an issue in your life that you're wrestling through and you're like, I don't know where to go in the Bible, and you decide to do the roulette and you just flip, let me encourage you, you don't have to waste your time with that. Just camp in Matthew 5, 6, and 7 if you don't want to know where to go. Jesus probably talks about the issue you're wrestling with. So this group of people chooses to follow Jesus, and he's about to lay out, what does it really mean to follow me? And he starts with a passage called the Beatitudes. Now, this is a more of a churchy word that we use. And this Beatitude is a collection of eight sayings that, depending on what version you're reading, start with God blesses the person who, or you'll be blessed if, or blessed is the person. And so this key word that we're going to be looking at is blessed. But there's eight phrases that Jesus uses. And you know that each person who's going to be listening to Jesus is like, oh, I'll listen to that. I want that. And this is how he starts out the most important sermon that he's going to give. And you don't follow someone unless you think they're going to make your life better, do you? I mean, these people experienced healing, so they're looking and saying, okay, I'll keep following this guy and listening to what he has to say. You and I have all been to conferences. We've been to seminars. We've heard speakers. Let's just be honest. We've all heard sermons that we're thinking, I'm out. Like this, you may have left church at some point, and it may have been at Crossbridge. I may have been preaching, and you thought, that was a waste of my time. Like, what time's football on? I get that. But we won't continue to go somewhere or do something where it's not going to benefit us. So Jesus has obviously struck a chord with people. and he's going to unpack what it means to be happy. So let's look. We're going to skip the first couple and just jump to verse 8. In Matthew 5, verse 8, it says this, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." That seems pretty easy, right? Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Maybe for you, you read this and this is easy, but for someone like me, when I read this, this makes me uncomfortable. This is a little difficult for me. And I believe that the same is true for the whole crew that was listening to Jesus at this time. This multitude of people who listened, when he said, "Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." You remember that huh face that I got on New Year's Eve and that week leading up? Like, what are you talking about? This is the same face I picture on every person looking at Jesus like, "Blessed are the pure in heart." What? Why would you say that? Now, we got to take a step back because this word here, blessed, that we see up here, blessed, in the Greek, it's a word, it's called makarios. That's the word that's used. And this word can also be translated happy. So when we have the name of the series, Be Happy, Jesus is saying, do you want to be happy? Or the happy person is the person who, and he's telling us how to find happiness. This is the key. And he says, happy is the pure in heart. Well, that's not as easy. Now, when you and I look at this verse, we see one thing. But the original listeners to Jesus would have heard something completely different. And here's the reason for it. This word pure here, it refers to a ceremonial cleanliness. Okay, this is when the original listeners would have heard Jesus say, "Blessed are the pure," immediately they would have thought, as a group largely made up of Jewish followers, we need to be pure. They understood purity. There's laws for everything. If you are Jewish and you go into the Old Testament, there's laws for how you wash your hands and when you wash your hands. There's laws for how to deal with sick people, when to deal with sick people. There's laws about everything, how you can eat, when you can eat, how you wash your dishes. Everything has a law attached to it. And it was for the purpose of keeping them ceremonially clean, ceremonially pure, because the temple was their main place of socialization. It was their main place of religious practice and worship. And so if you couldn't go there, there was a problem. So you were always looking out for yourself to say, what can I do to stay pure because I need to go back to the temple? Does that make sense? So the purity is already on the mind of the listener. And they're like, I know how to do that. I know all those rules. I've had to follow them since I was a kid. It's us constantly saying to our children, empty the dishwasher, clean your room, make your bed. And by the time they're adults, we hope that they finally get it. It's the same true here. They would have heard these rules over and over and over and knew what to do as adults. And now they're listening saying, oh, okay, be pure. But Jesus stops and makes it difficult. He turns it upside down, and he goes after a very specific area of purity. He goes after the heart. I think this is where the listeners started to feel very uncomfortable. Because this is the place where I start to feel uncomfortable too. Sometimes the hardest place to experience happiness is in my heart. Because I know how very messed up I am. And I know the things that my heart sometimes wants to say, but I hold back on, that I keep inside. I can put on a great outward appearance, and I can seem pure and clean to everyone around me. Someone even joked with me this morning as I drove the truck in and for setup, and I didn't get into an accident, which was really awesome on the icy roads with a giant truck, because if I hit somebody, that poor car was not going to make it. And they said, oh, well, it's a good thing you're the blessed guy. I get it. I could totally put this on for people. I can. I'm the pastor, right? I mean, my life should be way cleaner than everybody else's. But this is a heart thing. And on the inside, it's not as clean and as pretty as you think all the time. I like the way the Message translates this verse. It says this. You're blessed when you get your inside world. Your, what's that word there? Okay, say it with me again. Your, and your, okay. Your, what's the first one again? And your, you're blessed when you get your inside world, your mind and your heart put right. Then you can see God in the outside world. I like this because it makes the connection to our head and our heart. When I see Jesus say that you'll find happiness on your inside world, when that's pure and put right, I personally understand this because I find major conflict between my head and my heart all the time. My head and logic and my mind tells me, Jimmy, if you're really honest and you let what has happened or you let the sin in your life be known, you will be rejected. If you actually let people in and expose what's really going on and what you really think sometimes, no one will like you. You will lose friends. People will judge you. My mind thinks this. Maybe you're in a way better place. I'm thankful for that. But I'm not going to make that assumption because I see many of you nodding going, I know that feeling. And my heart at the same time is at battle with my mind because my heart's screaming, I'm dying in here. Like, do you know what it's like to hold on to all this stuff? Do you know how much energy I'm using to hide and to hold this? You're so worried up here and I'm dying down here. And I'm at conflict. I'm at conflict constantly. And Jesus is like, you know what? You'll be happy. You'll be blessed when this all starts to get put right. You got to have them work together. Some of you are looking and you're saying, I get this. I understand what you're saying. There are others of you looking going, what did I just step into in this new year? Like, this is one messed up guy. Yes, it's so true. It is so true. This is one messed up guy. But that's what makes what Jesus says here so amazing for me. It changes my life, and I believe it can change yours to where you can find true happiness. You can find true happiness here. I believe that if we took the time to slow down and we intentionally ask God to reveal what's going on inside of us, we'd recognize collectively that we are far more a mess than anyone, including ourselves, really understand. You know, when I was back in college, I remember taking a class, and I had a small group of guys that I met with regularly during that class, and it was a group of men that I learned to trust, and I could share different stories from my life with them and what was going on. It was a very safe place, and near the middle to end of the semester, I remember there was a period where we started talking about family history and childhood and all that kind of stuff, and I was like, all right, that's cool, whatever. And now, I had a great childhood. There are so many memories that I had from being a kid that are amazing. Trips and events and, you know, family love, all those things. I had a great, great childhood. But there are very specific moments for me growing up that bring great pain. They bring great shame and great worry to my life. And there's nothing I could do to change those situations or have any play in how they happened. But they're there. And up to that point in my life, I had kept those completely by myself. They were mine. Not for anybody else, because if anyone knew, I'd be in deep trouble. And so we sat in this group, and I remember these guys kind of unloading things, and I'm like, wow, man, you're messed up. You know, like, that's pretty deep. And then it came to me, and they're like, what about you, Jimmy? Remember that conflict, that head-heart conflict? My head's like, no way, man. No way. If they know, they will never talk to you. You will be shunned by this group. All sense of security will be lost. Don't do it. I'm thankful that day that my heart won because my heart was screaming, I'm done, man. This is exhausting. And so I took a chance. And I remember sharing some of those stories and some of those experiences. And I believed when I looked up, people were going to be like, ugh. Instead, I was met with compassion. I was met with tears, which floored me. I was met with forgiveness. And I say that because I needed to hear someone tell me that I was forgiven for some of that stuff. because I wouldn't even bring it to God. I had never felt more exposed in my entire life, but I had never felt more free. I had never felt more exposed and vulnerable, but I had never felt more free. And in that moment, they took a chance to kind of challenge me, and they challenged me with what I believe was the worst challenge ever. And they said, "You're about to get married." I'm like, "Yeah." Like, does your fiance know this stuff? I'm like, "No." "You need to tell her." "No." "No, seriously." "Yes, seriously." "No." And I drove home about an hour and a half from school, and in the car I was praying, and I felt this overwhelming sense of, oh my gosh, it felt so good with this group of guys to be known for the first time. Really, like, be known. And that weekend, Eileen and I had a date, and I remember going out on the date. And Jerry, you know when you need to tell someone, like, tough stuff? Everything you eat doesn't taste the same. And no matter what you do, you're like, you're just thinking about that conversation. That's all I was thinking about. So nothing mattered that night until we sat in our car, my car outside of my house. And I remember the stomach knot and the, I'm glad I didn't eat a lot because I'd probably throw up right now feeling. And I looked at Eileen and I said, "I have to tell you something." And all I was expecting was, "We can't get married. This is not going to happen." And as I unloaded my story, my real story, I remember being met with I drive stick, so I had my hand there for some sort of control and safety. I remember her putting her hand on mine and looking at me and smiling and saying, "I still love you. I'm sorry. We'll get through this." I was met with grace. I was met with a love that I could never, ever, ever thought at that stage of our relationship we would have been through. It didn't come from me faking. It didn't come from me protecting. It came from a purity of heart and mind where I was no longer hiding. Because I think we spend so much time and energy hiding our stuff that we can never truly be loved by God, by ourselves, or by people around us. And in that moment, I knew if this woman could love me because of that, she can love all my mess. And now, can I tell you, she married a mess, but at the same time, I don't have to hide anything. I don't have to worry. I can expose it all. And yeah, that doesn't mean it's pretty or it's easy or that it's like, "Oh, I forgive you for all that." No, I could be a real jerk sometimes, right? Yes. She's, yes. I can, but I can be loved amidst of it because God loves me in that, and I can expose who I truly am to him, to my wife, to my kids. So when Jesus claims that we'll be happier when our hearts are pure, he's not joking around. He's not kidding. He's not saying this because he thinks that's a good idea. He actually understands the heart and that it needs to be free. Jesus is calling for us to say, "You know what? I know the lose the weight thing. I know the stop the drinking thing. I know the you know, you want to pay off all that debt thing." Those are all good things, but they're not the inside things. They're not the inside heart that I want to get at. It's 18 chapters later in Matthew that he's amidst a group of amazing teachers of the law who know all the rules. They know what to do on the outside, and he has some very, very strong words for them. He says this starting in verse 23, I believe it is, or 25. Matthew 23, verse 25. "What sorrow awaits you as teachers of the religious law, you Pharisees, hypocrites! For you're so careful to clean the outside of the cup and the dish, but inside you are filthy, full of greed and self-indulgence. You blind Pharisee, first wash the inside of the cup and the dish, and then too the outside will become clean." You know, if someone was there at Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, and then they were there at this, they would think they got off easy at the Sermon on the Mount with the Beatitude, because he is about as blunt and strong as you could think right here. Jesus doesn't mess around with these teachers, and he's like, you want to talk about this? I'm glad you know all you know, but you're filthy. It's disgusting. And he uses a word picture that we all understand. And he's like, it's like a cup. or a dish. If the outside's all clean, that's fine. But if the inside's a mess, who wants to use that? No one. Have you ever gone to the diner? You sit down and there's that film on your cup? You're not drinking out of that thing. The lipstick ring? Mm-mm. Did you get the fork that's got the egg yolk dried on it? Are you using that beast? No way. You'd rather cut with a spoon, but I'm not using it. Why? Because it's not what it's doing what it's designed to do. It needs to be clean to be used. You could do all you want on the outside of a plate, on the outside of a cup or a bowl. But if the inside isn't clean, it just doesn't matter. And you could scrub as hard and as long as you want at the outside. Guess what? It doesn't matter if the inside's not touched. And knowing that I was going to be talking about this passage and thinking through all this stuff, I was washing dishes on Thursday night because Eileen was at work and it's the only night I wash dishes. And I remember sitting there with a bowl from my kids' dinner, and I don't know how my son does it, but the inside and the outside are both equally a mess. He's got silverware. He's got it all, but I don't know. I mean, I don't eat like that. Eileen doesn't eat like that, but Jimmy eats like that. And so the inside and the outside's a mess, and I'm doing the dishes, and he hands it to me. And I was like, ooh, inside, outside. I'm going to talk about that Sunday. And so I started to clean the inside first. And as I started to wipe with soap and water and really go to the inside while the faucet's running, you know what's very interesting? The water starts to splash out of the inside, and the outside starts to get clean. The outside starts to change. But that's not my focus, is it? Where's my focus? Talk to me. Where's my focus? It's on the inside. When I focus on the inside, the outside benefits. If I focus on the outside, nothing happens in here. And God says, you want to be happy. You really want to be blessed. I want to tell you, it starts on the inside. It starts when the head and the heart are connected in purity, when we're no longer hiding, when we're no longer fearful of people seeing what's inside, because when we're exposed, you know what? We don't have anything to hide anymore. We're not worried about getting caught. We're not worried about being found out because it's already been out there. What's the big deal? Boy, Jimmy, you're not that patient. I know. I'm asking God to help me with it. You see, when it's exposed, you don't have to worry about it anymore. There's freedom in that. There's purity in the head and the heart combined. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. You know, the messier the person that Jesus met, the more grace and love and forgiveness that he showed them. When we invite God to start cleaning the inside of the cup, we begin to see how amazing his grace and forgiveness is for us. Some of you here this morning are fearing that your stuff is too much. You're thinking, Jimmy, you don't get it. I don't know your story, but I'm sure it's messed up because so is the person next to you. And that's why Jesus came, not so that we can live a burdened life or a hidden life. Jesus has come to forgive us our sin, and that's the root of this, guys. The root of our issues is our own sin issues. It's anything we think, say, or do that displeases God and that becomes self-focused. And God's saying, it doesn't have to be that way. I've got something better. I really do. I'm not out to rip the inside of your mug apart. I want to help you. I want to help you. This is where Jesus is focused. And here's what's funny. I think the more we experience this purity of heart on the inside and outside, the greater empathy it gives us to the people around us. I think it allows us to look at those around us, and when they leak, do you know what I mean when they leak? It's like when you're coming into church and you're supposed to look all good, and all of a sudden your kid grabs too much in the cafe and you're like, put it back! Oh, I shouldn't have said it that loud. You know, and you're like, I didn't mean it. Yeah, you did. We leaked. We all leak. We leak when the kid does something they shouldn't do, or your spouse says something, you're like, not here. And we leak. We leak. And so here's the funny thing. When we leak, we have an opportunity, and you and I both have felt this. We feel judged by people. what are they going to think now that they know that I'm not perfect? What are they going to think? Are they going to think I'm a horrible parent because I yelled at my kid? No, they're going to be thankful you did that. What are they going to think? What are they going to do? Or do you find yourself in a position where someone snaps and you look and go, oh, what kind of parent are they? I wonder what it looks like every day in their household. You see, this judgmental thing doesn't really happen so much when there's a dirty cup inside that you've allowed to be exposed. When you know how messed up you are and I know how messed up I am, you see someone leak, and instead of going, ooh, you go, I understand that. And maybe instead of judging in the mind and going, look at you, you walk over and you say, I get it. I snapped this morning too. It's always Sunday mornings are the worst. Yeah, I yelled at them about breakfast. Or they wouldn't get ready quick enough and I always feel like we're rushing out that I snapped too. You tell me, which would you rather as someone when you leak? I'd rather someone say, I understand. I'd rather someone say, I get that pain. I get that frustration. I do that too. Rather than, boy, you stink at this thing. See, when we're pure in heart and in mind, we have empathy for those around us. You know, I dream for us as a church that we would be pure in heart because I want to see God. I want to see God. I want at Crossbridge for us to be happy. Not happy in a way that's like, yay, smiles for everyone. That's great. But I'm happy because I have nothing more that I need to hide from God. And whatever's going on, I can bring it and be loved in the midst of it. So it makes me wonder when we have our list of resolutions and goals for this year, why did we pick them? Was it just to look better on the outside? I think when we focus on the inside, it'll change us. Please make no mistake, it will cost us. There's a sense of vulnerability that comes with that. Awkwardness, believe me. I get it. But I think God's more in this than in this. This is fine. 2017 probably won't be much happier. God's in here. And so my challenge for us this morning is to redefine what happiness looks like. Where we're asking God to come and meet us, to bring a blessing. I wonder what this would look like to see God in marriages. What would it look like if you were totally vulnerable with your spouse? Maybe with your kids. You know when you snap at them when they do that thing you do all the time? Yeah, what if you explain to them why you do that? And the fact that you wrestle with it too. You might find more empathy. Maybe if you find yourself this morning not seeing God and you're like, why can't I hear him? Why can't I? Maybe this is so much of a mess that you've never invited God to come in. This morning I beg you, don't start 2017 a week in. Worried about this. Ask God inside. Invite him to change your life. Ask him to make you pure in heart. And the two values that we have here at Crossbridge, our core values, one of them is transparent relationships. You need someone to come alongside that you could do this with. If you have a spouse, I really want to encourage you. If there's things you're hiding, you're in trouble. You need to be exposed and open in your marriage. I know that may be difficult and you may need counseling through that. Excellent. Go get it. Please. I dream about what it would look like for us as a church if people could come to Crossbridge and regardless of where you are, of your mess and your shame and what we hide in our sin, that there's a safe enough place to be like, you know what? This week just really sucked. And here's why. And you lay it out. And instead of, wow, you're a messy person, it's, man, I understand that. Do you think God can do something in this? What is God teaching us in this? And instead of pointing at each other, we're turning our attention to God. This pure in heart, pure in mind. This is how to be happy. So maybe 2017 isn't about losing the weight. Maybe it's not about saving more. Those might make you happier, but to truly be happy, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. Will you pray with me as our worship team comes back up? God, I thank you that we can see you in a life of transparency and purity. And I'm fully aware that there's so much that we hide from people around us. God, I pray specifically right now for marriages that are here that I just know it's a wrestling match. And there's not transparency. There's parts of stories that are hidden. There's web histories that are cleared. There's windows that are shut before someone comes in. And I recognize that's there. God, I know there's a lack of transparency and purity when it comes to so many at work. And there's this, how do I deal with time? And how do I deal with money? And if I lie about what I spent on that, it'll be better. God, I pray that we'd be a community that doesn't lie about what we do. We would own it. Understanding that in the midst of it, you bring an immense amount of forgiveness. You call us to purity. You call us to looking like you for the sake of others. So it's not that we get to sit in it and be like, well, that's fine. No, you always call us to something better. I pray that we would be a community where we could be transparent with each other so that we can direct ourselves more towards you, so that others, when they come to this place or when we go to out, they would say, I want whatever you've got. Why can you smile when it just doesn't seem like the right time? And I'm happy. Why? Because I'm not hiding. God, allow us to be a community that doesn't hide. And in doing so, we would be happy. And at this time, as we take an opportunity to give back to you, I thank you that we could find happiness in giving back and trust. And knowing that you are a good God who could do far more with what we give than we can. I thank you for this past year and how you've continued to provide. So God, will you bless this offering as we take it? Will you continue to allow it to expand your ministry and those we care about in this community in 2017? We love you, and it's in your name we pray. Amen.